Welcome to F1 Mode Push Episode 8. I'm Jeannie Haruska.
And I'm Buzz Sherp.
Buzz, it's finally here. We have been talking about this episode for weeks. We have our first guest.
It's going to be awesome.
It is so exciting. Our guest today is Cora Veltman. She previously worked at NBC Sports covering IndyCar and was heavily involved in the creation of the Mario Andretti exhibit at the Indianapolis Speedway Museum. She's currently the digital media editor at Sportico, where she is frequently consulted on F1 and motorsports. And she is joining us today to talk all things Andretti. We will also be delving into all the latest updates from Silly Season, of which there are many. But first, we'll talk to Cora. Cora, welcome to F1 Mode Push.
Howdy. Howdy. Thank you for having me. This is my first podcast ever. I'm a little bit nervous because my entire career has been behind the scenes, kind of in television, in writing, in museum development. And so for people to be asking me the questions and what my opinion is a little nerve-wracking, but I think we could do this.
If it makes you feel any better, you're filling the seat that we eventually hope will be filled by Daniel Ricciardo. We have invited Danny Rick on to practice his F1 commentary in preparation for what we are sure to be a very lucrative ESPN career. So you are walking in the to-be footsteps of Daniel Ricciardo.
I would have put it a little bit differently. When Danny Rick comes on, he will be walking in Cora's shoes.
Oh,
I gotta say, I like that. I could feign a very, very bad Australian accent for you, but I'm not gonna embarrass myself right out the gate.
Well, like we said in the intro, we're so excited to have this conversation because Buzz and I have been talking about this for a few episodes now, and it's great to have somebody on who has much, much more Andretti expertise than either of us do. And in that vein, we're actually going to start with just an explainer, because if you're immersed in the F1 world, the Andretti name may be something you're familiar with in terms of a previous F1 driver, but you don't know the weight of the Andretti name here in the United States. And so for listeners who don't follow IndyCar, who don't know the history of Andretti, how would you explain the weight of the Andretti name in the United States?
I would say, not just in the United States, but in the motorsports world in general, the Andretti name is a dynasty. There's really no way to go through motorsports record books without running into the Andretti name, specifically the grandfather of, and the one that kind of made the name famous, Mario Andretti, who is a Italian immigrant. He and his family came to the United States and settled in Nazareth, Pennsylvania, pretty early in his life when he was, you know, just, I believe, around teenage age. And he and his twin brother, Aldo, started sneaking out, racing jalopies, lying about their age, and kind of doing just kind of grassroots stock car things, and found their way kind of scrapping up the open wheel ranks of sprint cars, midgets, and USAC in the United States pretty young in their lives. Now, Aldo got hurt pretty bad in a sprint car accident pretty early on in his career. Some people say that Aldo was the better race car driver of the two, which we will never know, because looking at Mario Andretti's stats, to imagine someone who could potentially have more natural talent is just insane to think about. But Mario continued on with his career racing almost exclusively open wheel to begin with, and then moving into sports car racing, endurance racing. He's got, you know, an Indy 500 win in 1969, the only Andretti to do so in the many, many, many attempts, and the five different Andrettis who have attempted that. And then went back and said, you know what? This isn't enough. I'm going to go into Formula One and win a championship over there. And so in the early 70s, Mario, racing under the American flag, because by that point he was an American citizen and was proud of being an American citizen, he raced with not only an American flag, but an Italian flag on his helmet, and brought huge attention to Americans in Formula One. And he was beloved for decades and was a household name, appeared in TV shows, movies, as well as like in books and rap songs. That was one of the things that we researched in doing the Mario Andretti exhibit. And so kind of the groundwork that he laid as the Michael Jordan of motorsports, not open wheel, not IndyCar, not Formula One, but motorsports as a general, just is insane. He not only lived through an incredibly dangerous period of motorsports where he had lots of friends and colleagues who passed away due to wrecks or injuries sustained in fire or on the way to the hospital or seatbelt accidents, et cetera. But he also pretty much didn't have a major injury like some of his cohorts did. He brought home the championships. He brought home the trophies. And then he had a son, Michael, who kind of followed that up with an incredible career of specifically IndyCar wins and championships. And though Michael was in IndyCar racing for a number of years, racked up many championships, never won the Indy 500, kind of a sore topic for him. But then, you know, once he stepped out of the car, he said, I think I'm going to be a team owner. I'm going to do what my dad never did and be the boss, be the one that makes the decisions and fills the seats and kind of created this new legacy for the Andretti name and using the Andretti name, bringing in sponsors, bringing in more attention. And then pretty quickly, his son, Marco, the third generation, came along and started racing in IndyCar as well and racked up numerous IndyCar seasons under his belt. He didn't have the stats that his dad or his grandfather did. And there's a lot of discussion about that, but you can only imagine the weight that that would carry if, you know, your grandfather was the greatest of all time kind of a thing. And Marco has since retired. You know, he plans on doing some Indy 500 runs every once in a while. I think he's doing the Tony Stewart SRX series just to kind of be around his friends and getting back in the car, because we know that race car drivers hate getting out from behind the wheel. But when you ask what does the Andretti name mean to motorsports, it means literally decades of wins, decades of history being made, stats on stats on stats, unlike pretty much any other family that we've ever seen in motorsports. You might have the Unsers in IndyCar racing that did a lot. You might have glimmers here and there with, you know, A.J. Foyt, Parnelli Jones, Senna,
Fittipaldi,
where you might have, you know, a father and a son or a father and a grandson. However, or just one really good driver, the Andretti name as a whole, and their trophy case is amazing. I have seen photos of it, is something to be heavily respected. And Mario's still around. He's in his 80s. He is an ambassador for the sport. He speaks a lot on a number of different topics because everyone wants to know his opinion. Similarly, again, to Michael Jordan, he's been there. He's done that. He's seen it.
Is it safe to say if you're an American and you know anything about motorsports, if you could name a motorsport person, it would be the Andretti name. That would be the thing that as a non-motorsport American or as a very casual motorsport fan, that would be the name you'd know?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
How did Mario do in F1 when he drove in F1?
Mario won a championship in F1, and that's no small feat, as we know. You know, I mean, yes, we are in the era of looking at, you know, a Sebastian Vettel, a Lewis Hamilton, these guys that may have had successive championships one after another and building eras, but in the Mario Andretti era, when he was an active driver, the fact that he could just kind of jump in a Formula One car and be like, oh, I can do this too, and win on these historic, you know, road and street courses. And then in the same season or, you know, very close proximity, go and try to race at the 12 hours of Sebring or endurance racing in 24 hours of Daytona or even the Indy 500.
It really is what makes him different. Like, yes, Lewis Hamilton has won all the championships and Vettel, and you certainly have multi-championship F1 drivers, but that's exclusive to F1. They haven't gone on to win championships in other motorsports, and certainly not within such a tight time frame. It's hard to think of a more versatile kind of Swiss Army knife driver than Mario Andretti.
Totally. The diversity of disciplines is not something that we get to really see, partly because it is so, so hard to make it to the top of any one discipline of motorsports, but also because it takes time. I mean, Mario started really young. P.S. If I haven't mentioned, he also has a Daytona 500 win under his belt. So he went and did the NASCAR thing too, which is not easy either. And he was able to say, I can do anything. I can be the best. It doesn't matter what kind of car. And you don't really get to see that anymore. The money that it takes, the time that it takes. And honestly, these team owners don't really want that to be happening anymore, because what if, you know?
Yeah, they don't want to invest in you for 1 year. They want you to stay for as long as they can humanly keep you.
You're my cash cow.
You're my ATM for the next decade.
Well, what if Lewis Hamilton got hurt, you know, doing a Sebring or something, you know, that wasn't towards the Formula One points championship? Well, then that's like, that's damaging to you. That's damaging to the team. That's damaging to all his sponsors. So you rarely get to see that. You do get to see a couple of drivers every once in a while doing what they call the double. You especially get to see that in the United States, like Danica Patrick did the double. She was doing IndyCar, the Indy 500, as well as the Daytona 500. Fernando Alonso came over and did the Indy 500 and skipped out on Formula One races, which Monaco is the conflicting race for that one. So can't imagine that many sponsors or teams would be very happy on you not doing Monte Carlo as one of the races. Yeah,
the iconic F1 race.
Right? Exactly.
And there are F1 drivers that go to IndyCar or IndyCar drivers trying to come to F1 right now. But once they make that jump, it's usually semi-permanent. Fernando Alonso, you know, is a distinction there, but you don't see drivers jumping around.
No.
Like, you just don't. There is no current Mario Andretti who is that versatile, who, like, in any given year, you don't know which different series he might show up in.
Absolutely. And I honestly don't think that we'll ever see that again. You know, not only is there only one Mario, because Mario is special, but I just don't think that opportunity is going to come around again in the same way.
It's a different era. But totally. On this note of, like, the Andretti name is decades in the making at this point, which means you have multiple generations who know that name, who think highly of that name. So in terms of the value that Andretti brings to F1, you bring such a broad age range in terms of the number of people who know that name and can recall having watched it on track.
Particularly in Italy.
Yeah, particularly in Italy, but, you know, anywhere that Mario Andretti left his mark, which is many a country at this point. And you know, the Andretti name, the team itself, the current IndyCar team, Andretti Autosport, based in Indianapolis, as most IndyCar teams are, they rely very heavily on that name for sponsorship. But why wouldn't you? You know, if you can, use it.
Just a matter of time before sponsors start relying on F1 Mode Push, of course.
Naturally.
We'll be sponsoring an F1 team in no time.
In no time. Well, you have to give Danny Rick, you know, an opportunity to get behind the wheel every once in a while as part of his contract to be an F1 Mode Push co-host, naturally.
Well, we're both lawyers, so that will be a carefully written contract. But yeah, we're open to
that. It will not be an Alpine contract. It will be an actual contract.
And just make sure you don't make any announcements before the ink is dry.
Definitely not on Twitter.
No, not so much.
So putting Andretti aside for a second, obviously this is in the context of trying to get an 11th team, and specifically an American team. You're a big motorsports fan. What do you think the value is of having, like, yes, we have Haas, and supposedly they're an American team, and that's very cute. But let's talk of what it would mean to have an actual American team in F1. How do you think of that in terms of the value? Again, F1 desperately wants F1 fans, right? It's why they signed up with Netflix. It's why there's 3 Grand Prix on the calendar next year. They are courting America like mad. So what would be the value of an American team on the grid?
Well, also, let's not forget that Liberty Media owns Formula One. They don't own the FIA, which is technically the sanctioning body. And I do think that that's an important distinction because that's where you're getting the heads butting. Liberty
Media. Oh, if it was up to Liberty Media, Andretti would have been in in a heartbeat.
They would have rolled out the carpet. They would have been like, hey, come on in. But Liberty Media is an American-based company. They own the Atlanta Braves as well as numerous other fingers in other sports properties. Formula One, of course, is one of their largest sports properties in which they make money on, not surprisingly. However, you know, it's been no secret that Liberty Media wants the money of American fans. Not necessarily American fans, I would argue, but the money of the American fans. They want a merchandise here. They want people to come to the race. They want people to sell their right kidney in order to come to Las Vegas for the first ever Las Vegas Grand Prix.
You know, it's a weird way to put it because you usually don't think of countries with a brand, but really they want the American brand.
And in terms of they want the money from it, Cora's right. Yeah. This is all about, this is trying to turn the U.S. into its own ATM.
Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of people that might be arguing against, you know, this, that, or the other in Formula One, one of those common argument angles is always tradition, just like any longstanding sports entity. But if you actually look at the tradition of Formula One at the beginning or very early to the beginning, it wasn't, you know, manufacturer versus manufacturer, it was country versus country. So yes, Ferrari has been around for decades and decades and decades. However, they weren't just Team Ferrari. They were Team Italy. They were representing an entire nation. The Tifosi go crazy because that's our home team. And you had Mercedes representing Germany. You had a French team. You had an American team. You had Team Lotus, which was Britain. And it wasn't just about an engine manufacturer. It was an entire country. And they used to have specific color coding of the cars. This is before sponsors, .. But they used to be like, okay, Lotus, you're green and yellow. That's your company colors. That's going to be Britain's colors. Okay, great. Ferrari, obviously, you're red. So anyone that's like, oh my God, we should make Ferrari any other color, banana yellow, they should be like, oh wait, no, the company color, the brand color, and the country color representing the entirety of Italy is red. So any other team coming onto the grid sporting a red car is going to automatically get heat if they're not Italian. So if we're looking at should a quote American, and I use that as an asterisk because you mentioned Gene Haas and his team, for all intents and purposes, is not an American theme. They're not proud to be American. They have an American flag that's maybe the size of a postage stamp on that entire car. And Gene Haas has gone on record to say in the past, I am not hiring an American driver. The talent pool isn't as deep, which is just preposterous to me and what I have seen in my personal life and career. But like to have a new team on the grid, especially representing an entire country, an entire demographic, an entire money market, fits right alongside with the tradition and history of Formula One.
Particularly on the heels of Drive to Survive.
Yes.
I mean, that's really exploded F1 in the United States.
Absolutely.
And country allegiance brings so many more fans. Like you said, Mercedes has its fans. But if you had to say who are the most loyal fans, I think you would say the Tifosi because there's national pride on the line. There's a national identity. Like you get a whole different type of fandom when there's a flag associated with it. And so
just to interject, when Mario Andretti was growing up in Southern Italy, before his family moved to the United States, he dreamed about being an F1 driver. You know, so there's that additional connection. It'll be interesting to see if Andretti makes it, what the Tifosi do with that.
Oh man, I think they would welcome him with open arms because for everything I've seen, they're very enthusiastic anyway. But I think especially an American demographic of fans would be ecstatic to have a proudly American team, proudly being the key word, and of course, an American driver to stand behind and truly cheer on.
Yeah. So you really have a triple threat there. You'd have an American team with a dynasty name associated, right? Absolutely. You put Andretti, and they have said they would want American drivers, or at least a American driver. So you'd have an American driver, name, and team. Yeah. If you're trying to lure American fans, it is really hard to think of a better formula for F1 than that.
Absolutely.
So let me change it up a little bit. You know, McLaren has an IndyCar operation, right?
They do.
Could you describe the nature of that McLaren IndyCar operation as compared to the Andretti team operation?
Yeah. So as we know, Team McLaren, which in the Formula One side kind of stand on their own, McLaren with Zak Brown as CEO, I believe is his official title. And is an American, by the way, hence yes. A good reason to both compare, but also a good reason Zak Brown and Michael Andretti are working together on projects, have been working together on projects, and are enthusiastically thinking of how they can, you know, help each other in ways while being competitors.
Well, including champion Colton Herta. McLaren has been one of the teams that says the super license yes. point should be amended. He should be let in.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, because also I think McLaren sees that and sees, okay, well, but what about our IndyCar drivers when they potentially want to come over? Which, you know, there's been talk in the past of different McLaren IndyCar drivers maybe coming into Formula One in different ways. I mean, Pato O'Ward definitely had some interest from Red Bull at one point, and et cetera. McLaren found their way into IndyCar more through a merger, whereas Andretti Autosport has been kind of self-sustained on their own for a while. They were also a merger or like a partnership. They were with Green, and it was Andretti Green Racing for a period of time. A lot of IndyCar teams go through periods like that.
Is McLaren a British-owned company, or is it an American company?
I believe it's British-owned.
Yeah, it's not American.
It's not American, though its lineage comes from Bruce McLaren, who was a Kiwi. He was from New Zealand, and they're very proud of that fact. And they would say that their papaya, which, by the way, is a trademarked color for McLaren, is...
They're very proud of their papaya orange.
That is the technical, like, New Zealand color of Formula One nationality colors, if we were talking about that still, which I find interesting as well.
One of the other interesting notes on McLaren is they did offer Danny Ric an IndyCar seat in the negotiations of like, yes, we're going to buy you out. We don't want you in our F1 car, but can we interest you in IndyCar? And going back to how we started this and like Mario Andretti's versatility, I actually think motorsport would benefit if you had McLaren have this dual setup, you had Andretti have this dual setup where it was easier for IndyCar drivers and F1 drivers to swap.
Cross-pollination.
Yeah. There's like, it creates, I think, more interest. I think it would likely inspire fans to also follow both. Because first and foremost, what we're seeing are fans that follow drivers as much as they follow teams. And just in like the NBA, you know, you would follow your driver to the next motorsport. And so it could, again, enrich motorsport if the FIA would get off its high horse.
And what a natural rivalry, you know, McLaren and Andretti, both in IndyCar and F1.
They get along too well.
I know.
Get along too well. Well, and also having that cross-pollination would so exponentially benefit IndyCar, who has a pretty anemic fan base in comparison to both Formula One and NASCAR in the United States, that they should be all for it. However, Formula One is the one that's holding that cross-pollination up.
Well, the FIA is holding it up.
Yeah, they want a barrier there. Yeah.
There are some F1 teams that are reluctant. I don't think necessarily as much of that it's about Andretti as much as they don't want to share their earnings with an 11th team.
I think that.
And they put a lot of money into their academy. Some of them have put a lot of money into their academy.
Yeah, I mean, that's a Colton Herta issue. But again, like, if you have interest in your younger drivers, an 11th team would make more sense. There's more F1 seats.
Yeah, and therefore more competition. However, kind of circumventing the traditional, quote, traditional way in Formula One of finding your ways up the ranks internally in Formula One through Formula 3, Formula 2, et cetera, to kind of find your way in another direction. I think a lot of these very staunchy Formula One team owners are going to say, well, but that's not how we do it. That's not the best way. They're not properly trained. They're not this, they're not that. But in reality, you know, a Colton Herta could very easily cut his teeth in IndyCar and be extremely talented, extremely well-versed, and come into Formula One and be successful. And that also potentially could open the door for like a Pato O'Ward or other IndyCar drivers that, you know, could find themselves in a feeder system into Formula One in a way that's never really happened since the 60s? Question mark. However, I just don't think that either series are properly set up to do that. The FIA, by the way, also does technically oversee IndyCar as well. The FIA controls kind of globally motorsports and motorsports registration.
Kind of like FIFA in soccer.
Exactly. However,
with an equally horrendous reputation.
Yes. As all global dominated sports.
I was going to say the Olympic Committee doesn't have a great reputation either.
They do not. Well, the money at that level and the decisions made at that level affects so many people and so many millions of dollars, if not billions of dollars, that it's entirely difficult to escape criticism in that way.
Yeah. So kind of wrapping this up, ultimately, this is going to be the FIA making a decision. Andretti has said they are gearing up to be ready for 2026. Like, they are going to operate like they are entering in 2026 until that option is 100% off the table. What are you seeing on the American side from Andretti in terms of this positioning to come into F1? What does that look like?
So, you know, a lot of people, including you guys, are talking about wanting Andretti to come into Formula One. In my personal heart of hearts, I don't think they're ready yet.
Because of the car, or because they're not ready to manage an F1 team?
For many reasons, including those two. Andretti Autosport has been successful in IndyCar in the past. I think it's pretty safe to say, looking at their stats from this last year, the IndyCar team's not doing all that great at the moment. They were at one point spreading themselves really thin. They had the most cars in the IndyCar grid. There are no caps, by the way. In IndyCar, you can have as many cars on the grid as you know, you can financially support, whereas in Formula One, you're capped at two.
Unless you're Red Bull, and then you get four.
Yeah, and then you can find your way around the rules.
Oh, no, AlphaTauri's independent.
Right, totally. They make their own decisions. But the IndyCar operation of Andretti Autosport has seen some dark seasons. They weren't even in championship contention. And they have some very, very talented drivers and some very talented engineers and some very talented crew people that I have worked with. And that team is just not firing all cylinders, so to speak. And they are just struggling. And I don't know if maybe Michael's focus has been pulled to the Formula One side and maybe they feel like they're in that question.
But it feels they're a little stretched thin.
Absolutely. And they also have a Formula E team, which has, you know, kind of struggled from the beginning, though that's a really tough series to excel in because there's not a lot of history there. And Andretti also has an Extreme E team, I believe, partnered with McLaren. So handshake there. But when you're trying to do the McLaren global domination of all motorsport disciplines thing, well, that's great because your name and your brand is in all these places. I don't know if Andretti properly has the infrastructure, the attention, the money, and, you know, really the know-how to successfully make each chapter of Andretti Autosport thrive? Is it better to have a backmarking Formula One team and an IndyCar team and a Formula E team and an Extreme E team? Or is it better to just have one branch of that, but be really successful? I honestly don't know.
So, Cor, there's a solution to this.
What?
They need to partner with Porsche. Porsche will provide all of the mechanical expertise.
That is our solution.
Yeah. Well, and almost a year ago, if not, you know, right around this time, there were rumors circulating, strong rumors circulating about Andretti buying Sauber. And really kind of
interesting. They could join Audi. I mean, Audi Andretti even sounds good.
Oh, it does. We like it.
It's very alliterative.
Yeah. Right. A German-American team. This sounds good.
Spicy. But, you know, like any team owner, like any team boss, Michael wants control. He wants to be able to pick the drivers. He wants to be able to build the team in a way that he sees fit and know that he's doing. And Michael raced in Formula One just for a very short stint in the early 90s. It wasn't overly successful of an endeavor, but Formula One is such a difficult hurdle to get over to even score points. If you're going to be spending that money,
if you're going to be another Haas,
then
it's going to be a tough road. So you think Andretti should be let into F1, but they need a longer runway. They need to be thinking 2030 instead of 2026.
Yes, that is my personal opinion, because I think we need to get our IndyCar team back in order. Fix your house. They are building a new state-of-the-art facility in Noblesville, Indiana, which I am very excited to eventually see. The Andretti Autosport facility, I'm sure, is being built with the future of expanding the team in mind, which, by the way, is its own expensive endeavor. And if we're spending money on things right now, a shop, entering into Formula One, all these other things, I think when they announced that the shop was coming, I think that, in my mind, is a signal of it's going to be a little bit before we see them officially in Formula One. But, you know, race car drivers are very stubborn and we don't give up. I do think that there is a future in which we will see Andretti. Obviously, there's a future that we're going to be seeing an American driver in Formula One. That's probably going to happen first. However, because in my heart of hearts, being, you know, working with Andretti, loving the Andretti name and legacy, I want to see them be really successful on their home turf of IndyCar racing. Because if they come into Formula One and they put Americans to shame, it doesn't do us good as a country entering into the world stage of motorsports, where we're already looked at as, you know, kind of the hick, kind of the unprofessional, kind of the NASCAR, you know, styling.
The bastard children of the motorsports.
Yeah. If we're going to show up, I want it to be like, look, we got this. We're going to give it a good shot. We're going to, you know, be competing at least for points, if not for a podium. I think it's a lot to ask any new team to be on the podium. But if they showed up, let's say next season or 2026, they showed up and it was a failure, that's embarrassing across the board, and it would hurt my heart. So I would say I need them to have a little bit more time. As an Andretti fan, as an American motorsports fan, I don't think we're ready yet.
I think the FIA turning them down for 2026 would go over better if the decision was we're not letting you in now, but. However, I don't think the FIA is interested in that. I don't think the FIA's concern is the same as yours.
I also don't think that the FIA plans too much in the future. I think it's a very now decision making organization.
Is it FIA that now has a new CEO who is an American woman?
Yeah, but she's not making decisions. Cora, thank you so much. We are going to continue to advocate for Andretti's inclusion into F1 as the 11th team. Maybe Andretti Porsche, or they could come in Audi Andretti, so they could come in as part of the existing grid. But either way, I'm guessing we'll be chatting with you again in the off season, because we would love to have a in-depth IndyCar conversation once the F1 season is officially behind us.
Absolutely. And in my In Cora's perfect world, this is a game I play a lot. In my fantasy partnership, I would draft Ford or Chrysler.
Oh my gosh. Don't put that on the table or we're going to be here all day.
To really bring home that true red, white, and blue.
Well, and that really would just dissolve FIA's concerns and people like Toto's concerns that say Andretti doesn't bring enough to the sport. If it was Andretti Ford walking up to the table, I think this would be a very, very different conversation.
Absolutely.
But until then, Cora, thank you so much.
Thank you, Cora.
Thank you for listening.
Whoa, silly season, Buzz. Just wow. Silly doesn't even capture it. It is just ridiculous.
I love it. I just love it. I mean, you know, what else are we going to do with no races? You know, I mean,
it could
be better entertainment. It is very nice TV, right?
Yeah, that the crazy is happening while we have this 3-week lull in F1, because there is definitely not a lack of things to talk about. Starting with a disappointment.
Yes, Red Bull has basically given up on Colton Herta.
I'm really bummed about this. I mean, if I was Red Bull, I probably would too. The only like viable way for Colton Herta to get his points dealt with like him driving in a winter series to the point where like he wouldn't secure the super license basically until like January, which is just cutting it way, way, way too close for an F1 team. But still, I'm bummed.
I am too. I think we've talked in the past about FIA and, you know, some of what may be
how much they make horrible decisions.
Well, and there may also be unconscious or very conscious bias against things American, be it manufacturers, be it team owners, be it drivers.
Yeah.
You know, that always sits in the back of one's mind with FIA, not F1. You know, I mean, they're American owned. F1 is American owned. I'm sure they're very, I think, as Cora Veltman said, you know, Liberty Media would love to have more American drivers, you know. American
Not more. Team. They would like to have a American driver. Yeah. We don't have any, but yeah.
Yeah. And credit to Red Bull. I mean, it was a business decision on their part, but, you know, they didn't get swept it up in the, you got to do it the right way. And they, you know, they got a driver's academy, but they were not devoted to, oh, we'll ruin the driver academy system BS that some of the other manufacturers are.
And I do think the super license topic is going to continue. Like, there are still comments being made almost every day about how much the super license system needs to be amended. Colton Herta aside, like the super license system needs improvement.
Well, I think your idea and others' idea of, you know, give IndyCar drivers full points rather than half points.
Retroactively have to go back and fix that for IndyCar. But the other option is to have super license like tryouts. You know, when you and I got our license, we took a driver's test. Yeah. You know, at the end of the F1 season, have a test where all the wannabe F1 drivers show up and they drive, you know, a previous year's F1 car. They have so many laps to complete a lap within a certain amount of time. And if they do it, they prove they can drive an F1 car. And they're either given a super license or they're given so many points.
I'd even make it a situation where they have to drive in traffic. You know, I mean, you can fashion that.
It would be such a TV hit. I mean, talking about entertainment, it would be
rookie league.
Much
right.
Yeah, but it would be a one-day rookie league.
I know it'd be awesome.
It would be awesome. Talk about high entertainment.
You and I are certainly already in discussions about our F1 Prius circuit, you know, how we're going to select drivers for that, right?
Yeah. But, you know, Stefano Domenicali, the president and CEO of F1, keeps coming up with all these ridiculous ways to, like, make F1 more interesting. Well, let's do this. Let's have a one-day super license drive.
Yeah, we'll get to Domenicali's ideas. You know, some of them aren't bad, but some of them are a joke.
Yeah.
I could use stronger language, but they're a joke.
I think of it, we could jump into that right now. I think of it kind of, I do think there's always a conversation to be had about how to improve a sport, right? I think of it the way that baseball is going through this era. Baseball is constantly trying to figure out how to speed up the sport, how to make it more entertaining, how to not lose as many fans, but also how to regain fans. And so every season, it feels like baseball looks a little bit different, right? And it sounds like next year, the shift is going to be limited. There's definitely going to be a pitch clock, more enforced. And so it's not a bad idea to also have F1 look in the mirror and say, you know, what can we do different?
I think you're right. I think it's a healthy organization that can do that. But, you know,
that does not mean every idea is a good idea.
No. I think the reverse grid idea is an interesting idea. I think that's worth talking about. Some of the
not for races. Like, if you were going to do a reverse grid, it would be like reverse grid in a sprint race or something.
Yeah, but some, you know, the way I look at the tricks, the gimmicks, I don't want gimmicks that reward the team that's got the best car.
Yeah, to me, it's a question of changes that simply reinforce the hierarchy that already exists. That's my concern, is if you award points for qualifying, right, I doubt it would be for the top 10. It would be for podium finishers, right? It would be for the top three, maybe the top five. And if you applied that to this season, Ferrari and Red Bull
would be where they are.
Would just have a hot, would have a stronger lead than they already do. Like maybe it would have closed the gap slightly between Ferrari and Red Bull, but it certainly wouldn't have brought any of the lower ranked teams higher. It's not going to change. So the question is, you're not doing it for placement. You're simply doing it for the spectacle.
And I think that's, they're not going to change how they drive for the points. You know, it's not going to change the spectacle. And, you know, what would make it really interesting is if you did things that I don't have any ideas off the top of my head, but if you did things that would empower the, you know, 4 through 10 teams a bit more and make more points available for them rather than just new ways for the, you know, Ferrari, Mercedes, and Red Bull to get more points. You know, I'm not interested in that. That's just, you know, they're still going to be competing in the same way they compete now for those points. So why waste your time?
Yeah. I really enjoy qualifying the way that it already is.
I do too.
I am somewhat intrigued by the notion of that qualifying should just be one lap. Everybody gets one lap, right? Yeah. You get to raise your hand basically and say, okay, this lap is going to be my lap, because it means there's a higher cost for error. But I think it would reduce how long qualifying is.
So the interesting thing is if you just had, and your idea that just one lap, you know, you might see a Lance Stroll or an Alex Albon, you know, being up towards the top. Yeah, we periodically see that, and you know what it would take away?
See them have the best lap, but yeah, I mean, it does mean that like you've seen times where Leclerc has botched his first lap, or Max hasn't had the greatest first lap.
Right, and Red Bull certainly partly this season because they're so dominant. You know, they play around with practice and even qualifying because they know it doesn't really matter where they qualify. So they gather data during qualifying, and it would limit that more, which would seem to make it what we really want with gimmicks is more competitiveness and more competition that draws the fans. And, you know, the reverse grid thing to me at first blush was, boy, that was an interesting idea.
I mean, to a certain extent, you're getting some portion of a reverse grid because of the way the grid penalties are going. So, I mean, one way to get reverse grids is like stiffen the grid penalties.
Yeah. Answer this for me, Jeannie. You know, the Italian Grand Prix was more interesting because some of the great drivers were coming from way behind, like Sainz and Hamilton. And it was, and as Lewis Hamilton said, God, I love that kind of racing. you know, having to pass cars and coming from behind. So I think the reverse grid.
Here's my question with the reverse grid is how do you make it so that the Ferraris and the Red Bulls don't just tank their qualifying lap? If Ferrari and Red Bull go into qualifying knowing they're qualifying for a reverse grid, all the cars would just put in a horrible lap. Like, how do you... Nobody wants pole.
It would take some manipulation.
Yeah, like you'd have to do it based off of like championship ranking, in which case qualifying has no purpose whatsoever. So I get the interest in a reverse grid because you'd get a whole bunch of overtaking. I don't know how you get an honest reverse grid, though.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's a good point. You know, maybe if your quality time is less than your best practice time, they go with your practice time. So now are they going to tank three practices and quali?
Yeah, but then you're not doing qualifying at all, and you're worsening the sport. You're taking away the second best part of race weekend, which is qualifying.
Instinctually, so, I like the idea. I grant you that it may take a little jiggling to make it work.
And I think again, my perspective is like, I don't get mad at Domenicali for proposing changes. Again, I don't think any sport is perfect. I think the issue is like, what is your motivation for these changes? Yeah.
Competition entertains.
And you can say F1 is entertainment, right? It makes money off of a whole range of things, but one of them is TV viewership, and therefore we're trying to attract more viewers. We would say, then let's talk about an 11th team and talking about Andretti and talk about these other options.
And it's not going to make money in the long term if you make it
into a joke.
If it's just Red Bull dominating one year or every year or another team dominating.
Gimmicky. So there's a middle ground.
Yeah. Well, and other sports, one of the things that several other sports have used to try and even out competition is salary caps, you know, and maybe they play around. If you could
certainly tighten it, that
you could tighten the salary cap for the top three teams for the next year.
I think the issue is bringing the cap down and bringing more things under the cap. There are a number of things right now that are not included in the budget cap. That'll change come 2026 and two. There are going to be more things that suddenly get included.
Is the salary cap F1 imposed or FIA imposed?
I think FIA imposed. All the regs come from the FIA. But with like F1 teams and whatnot, they all have to agree to this, right? The salary cap was agreed to.
Right.
But you could make the salary cap have tighter. A much, much greater impact. And I'm guessing we may be heading there, because then you would also, I think, see more grid penalties because teams wouldn't be able to be developing as many parts. You would also not see as much development, right? Haas basically was able to bring one upgrade this year. It didn't pan out the way they wanted it to. And they're basically like throwing their hands in the air and being like, this is what we got. But, you know, Red Bull keeps bringing new parts and Ferrari and Merck keep bringing new parts. And if
Ferrari and Merck and Red Bull, they start at the back of the grid, and it doesn't really change what the podium is in the end, you know.
So, but anyways, I want to make sure we cover other silly season updates. So,
Alpine, how about Alpine?
Oh Jesus! Oh my God! Alpine is just a shit show.
Jeannie's a lawyer.
They have no idea what
they're
going to do with their second team.
She occasionally lapses into legal language. She went to law school.
I'm not a practicing lawyer. Do not ask me for legal advice. But they're basically having tryouts soon at the Hungaroring. They're having a bunch of drivers come to test drive last year's car, so they can see them in action. Right? They're testing Giovinazzi, Jack Doohan, De Vries. They were going to allow Colton Herta to come. Presumably that's not going to happen
Schumacher.
Anymore. Yeah, like Alpine doesn't know what the hell it's doing. And as you and I have said before, maybe they should prioritize their legal team. They should get themselves some really good lawyers. And
who
I would
write
also
contracts.
Add some good PR people who can contain Laurent Rossi, because every time he speaks, Alpine just sounds worse. The quote he gave, or the interview he gave most recently, complaining that they might abandon their junior driver program completely because of what went down with Piastri, it just sounded like pouting.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to take my toys and go home.
Well, in that case, Porsche's looking for a team.
Yeah. It just, like, Alpine needs to...
grow up.
Needs to figure out their business. De Vries is a man in high demand. Talk about a man whose stock has skyrocketed since Monza. It was unclear if he was going to have a seat next season in F1. Now the question is, he's going to have a seat. It just
got three choices.
Which team?
He's got three choices now.
Yeah, so he's being courted by AlphaTauri to fill the seat that Colton Herta was presumably going to fill. He is being courted by Alpine and by Williams. It's a man with options. It's
well, nice what's interesting about it is what's interesting about it is it'll make him more money. Because he's in demand. Somebody's got to buy him and pay more than somebody else. But, you know, I was the other day, I was looking at a list online of all the drivers in the past 30, 40 years who in their first race had scored points. And some of them were quite well known, and some of them were, shall we say, less than quite well known. You know, Nicky DeVries seems to have some talent. It's an interesting gamble getting too excited about getting Nicky DeVries and committing too much to him. He's going to look for a longer contract. I would, if I were the team, I would be, as their lawyer, I'd be saying, do.
Well, on the other hand, you don't want to sign him for only 1 year and then have him prove to be exceptional and have him go sign with another team.
Yeah, I'd I'm just as a lawyer, I would say, all right, give him a 2-year contract with certain benchmarks, and if he meets the benchmarks, it turns into a 4-year contract
or a team option where the team can pick it up.
Exactly. I'm not sure Alpine is capable. Well, you know, we go back to the Alpine lawyer problem. Yeah,
the team that I mean, Alpine is just a mess right now. But the other team that I don't quite understand the strategy for is Haas. It sounds very much like they just do not want to keep Mick Schumacher. It sounds more and more like they are set on finding a replacement for him. But then the two names that keep popping up are two people who have flunked out of F1.
Yeah.
Antonio
Giovinazzi
and Nico Hülkenberg.
Although I do love Giovinazzi's moniker, his nickname, the Bergamo Bullet. Bergamo is a city in Italy. It's a great name. And boy, is he's much loved in Italy. But
he's flunked out of F1.
Right, exactly.
You don't want to invest in Mick Schumacher. So you're going to invest in the past?
I guess they come cheaper, but if you're not going to invest in Mick Schumacher, then take a flyer on a young driver, a Jack Doohan or whoever. You know, there's a lot of young'uns out there that maybe you'll hit on a Nicky DeVries. You know,
the only thing I can think of is they're looking for a seat warmer. They're looking for somebody who's going to come in, drive just for next season, not crash the car.
And what does that get them?
They think they're going to have more options at the end of next season. But even if that's the case, why not re-sign Schumacher to a 1-year contract? So I don't really understand what's going on at Haas.
Yeah, best I can, imagine, and I'm imagining, but very often this kind of stuff comes down to money. Yeah, and
yeah, I can't imagine that Schumacher is all that expensive, and he does bring the name.
He does bring neither Nico Hülkenberg or Antonio Giovinazzi.
I do wonder if Giovinazzi brings Ferrari money. It's the only thing that would make sense for him is if Ferrari, for some reason, wants him back in F1. He is associated with the team. And Haas...
He brings the Tifosi. I don't think you need to encourage.
No, the issue is whether Ferrari is going to pay Haas to take Giovinazzi. I think that's the issue, is whether
if Ferrari thinks Giovinazzi's got more than he's shown so far. Yeah, I think you're right, Jeannie. We don't know what the hell's going on with Haas.
I mean, this is what we mean when it's just like the epitome of silly season. It's just like some of this is just downright silly. The one thing that's not silly is it does seem very much like Williams will not be re-signing Latifi. And I really hope that's true, because we've talked about a bunch of drivers already, and I would take any of them over Latifi.
It'd be really interesting if they took Logan Sargeant, who's been talked about by Williams. If they don't get somebody like, my guess is Williams probably prefers Nicky DeVries, but, you know.
Yeah, Sargeant also might still be a needs his ride. Super license. So if they're interested in him, they're going to wait.
Yeah, my understanding is he needs to finish like fifth in Abu Dhabi.
At least fifth and higher,
and he gets his super license.
Yeah, that would be interesting. He's an American.
There we go. But he's taken the F3, F2 route. He hasn't done the IndyCar route, which matters. But, you know, Williams, we always wonder about the degree of association of Williams and Mercedes and what say Mercedes has on who Williams takes. My guess is they'd love to see DeVries there, but you know, I think, as you said in another conversation, AlphaTauri is probably the best ride for DeVries.
I think it's the best drive for him. So it sounds like DeVries and Helmut Marko had a conversation, and what I would want to know from that conversation is, did Marko say, hey, come start in AlphaTauri, and you know, if you do well, we'll talk about bringing you up to Red Bull? That would be the incentive, is like, yes, we just signed Checo, but we only signed him to a 2-year contract. So come drive for AlphaTauri for 2 years. You do well. You join your fellow Dutchman in Red Bull.
Yeah, it's the George Russell model.
Yeah, like, I don't know how you turn that down as a driver. I have many grievances against Red Bull and Helmut Marko in particular, but if you're a driver, how do you turn down the opportunity to come drive in F1 for 2 years with the possibility of driving for the currently number one team?
Yeah.
So we'll see where he eventually lands.
How much, you know, what's the right way to put this? How depressing is it going to be for Nicky DeVries to drive for AlphaTauri for 2 years? You know,
not as depressing as it would be to drive in Williams for 2 years.
Yeah, I suppose.
But with Williams, it's a different relationship. Yeah. I mean, I do. Williams retains ties with Mercedes, right? Which is where DeVries is right now. He's associated with Merck. So from that standpoint, if you put the ranking of the team aside and say, would you rather be mentored by Red Bull or would you rather be mentored by Mercedes? I personally would choose Mercedes.
Well, what's the best example? What's a really good example? George Russell.
Yeah.
He drove for Williams for 3 years.
Red Bull has no problem like chewing drivers and spitting them out.
Right.
They are cutthroat.
Speaking of which, Pierre Gasly, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they cycled through a number of drivers before reaching Checo. And there's even been rumor that if Checo's performance doesn't go up, that he could get booted down to AlphaTauri sooner than the end of his contract. But again, like, Nicky DeVries, I'm assuming, is a pretty confident driver who thinks he's a future world champion, and his thinking is like, yeah, put me in an AlphaTauri and I'll prove to you that I deserve that Red Bull seat. So this is silly season, which means all of this could change. We'll have updates next week. We will also finally be doing our Singapore Grand Prix preview next week, which I'm actually super excited about. The Singapore race is a very, very cool race, in part because it's a night race. And I've been getting ready for it by going back and watching the 2019 Grand Prix, which is actually the last time we raced in Singapore. And
I've been getting ready for it by trying to stay up late.
Well, because it's a night race, it's actually, the time is no different for us. It airs at the same time that the European races do. It's the Japanese Grand Prix that you need to brace yourself for. Those are the like 2 a.m. watch times.
Maybe we'll do a live run of F1 Mode Push.
That you will sleep through at 2 a.m. Yes. All right, everybody. We will chat with you next week. Until then.
See you next week.
Take care.